Sing to the bottom. Only to wind the belly up on your bedroom floor. Innocuous form. I'm underwater. Half of the day, but still you wait till I'm ready to float. And carry me home.
Something along those lines is the sheer cost of mounting that legally, aside from let's not use the legal system and the bureaucratic something so complex or quaint as elections boards and so forth, but isn't it basically on them to provide some kind of evidence and pursue that to whatever end there is, as we saw?
Oh, that's so old-fashioned evidence. Wow.
Well,
I remember that.
Surely, if they believe that, then that activity, that disruption you're talking about, other than anything else, through what mechanisms there are, is costly. And I think it's up to them to kind of pony up. And, you know, if it's based on nothing, it's going to be even more costly to continue pretending nothing is something.
I mean, this might be too philosophical of a point, but like, what are the penalties for not believing in the truth? I think the reality of what happened yesterday in terms of the results, like, that's the penalty for not actually believing in reality, not looking at the table in front of you and saying that's a table, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in there may be some self-correction here, and I don't want to be overly optimistic about the results, right? Because clearly, well, it doesn't look like the Dems are going to retain the House, right? So there are some, the amount of election deniers that have made it into office, including, you know, now newly elected Senator J.D. Vance, right? Like, some of that stuff is still extremely worrying. But I do think that there are costs to not believing the things that your eyes are telling you, right, staring you right in your face. Right?
You know, so. I saw some analysis of the J.D. Vance victory just before the show about how Mitch McConnell poured money into that Ohio race at the expense of other races in places like Pennsylvania, where basically Democrats prevailed. And it was actually, it seems to be a very good chess move that they basically sacrificed somebody in Ohio, one seat, were able to prevail in other places that were probably very, very important in the bigger picture. Gila, you had something.
One thing that I found very interesting, something that I've seen throughout last night and today, is people are congratulating candidates who lost for conceding their races. And it is fascinating to me that people are like, hey, this morning I saw a bunch of flutter on social media that Dr. Oz called John Fetterman to concede this morning. And congratulations to Dr. Oz. For the fact that conceding an election is now on par with a child taking their first steps. We are so proud of you for this thing. We weren't sure you'd be able to pull. It's part of the process, man. It's an election and someone wins and someone loses. And that's just the way that it is. And the fact that we're now really proud of people for understanding that that's the way it works terrifies me in such a profound way. Also, thinking about misinformation, echo chambers, things of that nature, I'm reading a book right now called A Murder on W Street, and thinking about I don't necessarily want to say it's the seeds of where we are now, but watching some of these pieces in their embryonic form 6 years ago and what they've turned into is also heartbreaking. I have a lot of opinions about the story in the book for other reasons that we're not going to go into right now. But watching and seeing where things have gone in 6 years. And, you know, 6 years ago when there wasn't Truth Social and there wasn't Parler and there wasn't Gab and there wasn't all of these free speech social media platforms that exist for everybody. But I don't know. I think the splintering of the world and the, like, even the proliferation of news channels and where you can go if you want to hear what you want to hear and where we go in that misinformation sphere. I have lost the end of my sentence, so I'm going to stop.
Well, now you maybe think of what we were talking about at the very beginning of the show, which was the media coverage before the election and how that seems to have influenced a lot of people and shifted in some degrees, particularly CNN seems to have adopted this both sides of every single issue. Where, okay, let's hear what the Nazi has to say, and basically weighing everything equally, but also making things seem so dire. There was a headline that I saw a few days ago that basically said that Democrats are preparing for staggering losses, and when they do, they're going to blame Eric Adams. I mean, what kind of a headline is that? Basically saying that everything is going to be chaotic, and this is how they're going to do the circular firing squad, when that hasn't even happened. There are so many stories like that. Meanwhile, all the Republican faux pas and various other funny quotes that they came up with kind of ignored because, well, we all know they're out of their minds, so we're not even going to cover it anymore. We're just going to focus on Democrats. I saw headlines today where basically, you know, you almost wonder if they're joking, saying that Democrats did not fail as badly as predicted and why this is bad for Biden. How is this possibly bad for Biden? I mean, yeah, you know, there are scenarios, I guess, you could concoct where he might be at a disadvantage a couple of years down the road if certain things happen in a particular way. But please, you know, it just doesn't seem like they can say anything that might make us not feel like there's some kind of catastrophe coming. I don't know about you guys, but I do know in the days leading up to Election Day, I was feeling nothing but dread. And it was all based on what I was hearing in the mass media. And this is me trying not to listen to the mass media. It still seeps through, you know? And I think, you know, this is something that, you know, I'd like to ask Welton. Why? What is the advantage? I understand disinformation, what comes from governments and people trying to influence the masses. But why does mass media engage in, I consider it misinformation, just to is it just to sell papers and to get viewers? Does that work?
Well, I think definitely partially it's the business model, and especially in the kind of post-Google, post-Facebook age of how news outlets have to, you know, generate revenue. But, you know, just in terms of what they're basing their judgments off of, right, a lot of it was polling. And I think it just goes back to the challenge of how do we gauge public opinion in an age where nobody trusts anybody else? And you look at gold standard, quote unquote, gold standard polling in the past doesn't exist anymore. You can't do it. You know, no one's picking up the phone. I mean, how many robocalls do you get on your phone on a daily basis? You're not picking up from a pollster. And somebody even gets through to you, identifies that they're doing a poll, you hang up on
them. Of course.
So this is part of the chat. It's a measurement issue. And then the media is trying to do, I would say, the best that it can, adhering to the journalistic standards that they think are still in play, you know, which I think that there's a lot of criticism, certainly of this whole both sidesism that, you know, plagues much of popular mass media. So, you know, I wouldn't classify what happened in the run-up as misinformation. Part of it is it's just incorrect. It turned out to be incorrect based off of the best information available at the time. I think it goes to our ability to critically think and say, do I trust this information or not? Should I believe the judgments that these people are making? Are they well-founded, right? So
would you say it's just bad journalism?
I wouldn't go that far. I think where you get your information from and how you base your judgments, that's got to be critically examined, right? I mean, I spend all day and all night on fringe platforms reading this stuff, and I have to pull myself out of that because I have to tell myself this isn't a reality, right? And similarly, if you're a journalist and you spend all day on Twitter or you only talk to other journalists, you're not going to get an accurate view of like how quote unquote Americans are feeling, right? Mm-hmm. And again, this is a hard problem. Like I remember I was talking with somebody at NPR the other day, and I was quoted as saying like, hey, Mark Zuckerberg couldn't tell you what people on Facebook are saying today, right? Like the whole concept of being able to understand what millions and hundreds of millions of people are saying, right? That's the issue. You can't measure the thing that you want to measure, right? So
I hear it as a very noisy atmosphere, especially in the run-up to elections. There's so many, the stakes are very high, and there are so many interested parties, literally and figuratively, in this networked media escape. And I think my gut or my intuition was that it was various forces colliding, like this idea that there's a sense of duty because the stakes are so high to raise people's awareness and to, as has been pointed out, a panic level. And I think that the amount of energy we're reminded again, the energy expended trying to get action with negative feedback and so forth is perhaps more than something that is inspiring, that people believe in the process or their communities, and that it is their civic duty to participate and so forth. So that I think was a part of it. I think there were also like really, interested groups that were exploiting some of the vulnerabilities in the mediascape, especially this in the timing of an election, that probably also were able to get things circulated that ordinarily people would maybe not be so alarmist about or react to so quickly. So I don't know, that confluence to me just felt suspicious, to the point of, I think even the New York Times headline was being widely criticized, and it's almost like, oh, they need this to be bland.
Wait, you mean so the that one that people... came out last night that basically said that Democrats are losing
right.
and key races and things like that?
They kind want
of
like it.
They watched the first minute of
they
the story.
They want it so bad. They want it to be negative and panic mode so badly that, like, it's almost as like a safety valve so that those that are losing have don't feel any of it.
But that's my point. I think that us being in a state of perpetual stress and just fearing the worst, I think that's where they want us. They want us to be that, because then we keep tuning in and going to them for more info.
They know the left will pick up.
We basically got away from this, and we went of all places to the progressive channel on Sirius XM, it's kind of like WBAI light, and they were basically talking in a much more sane, rational way, saying, look, these polls. What Welton was saying just now, who picks up the phone? Nobody picks up the phone. So, the kinds of people who are picking up the phone are probably of a particular political bent. Maybe they're homebound or something, or they just like talking on the phone a lot. But most young people don't even have a landline. Do they even call cell phones? Do people pick up numbers they don't recognize? So, with all that in mind, all these facts and figures that are being presented to us with basically no research involved, how accurate could they possibly be? Go ahead, Rob.
I think there's something to be said, too, for not only the major media outlets trying to keep people in a constant state of stress, but also just really blatantly cherry picking things in order to cater to their base. The front page of the New York Post today was spectacular. It's this huge full-color photo of Ron DeSantis and his family. He's holding a baby. You know, they're in front of a huge American flag. It says "The Future," and it's a you know young GOP star DeSantis romps to victory in Florida, and then a little bar on the bottom that says "Hochul claims victory in New York." This is a New York newspaper talk. You know, ostensibly where you get news about New York, and you know our governor, our history-making governor, is a small bar on the bottom. While the big spectacle is, of course, the Republican who's the rising star of the party.
And I should also point out, you said "The Future." It was "The Future." Like, just want to make
the
sure
future,
that
like
their
DeSantis.
Joke is it lands.
Yeah.
Like DeSantis, "The Future." Funny. Yes, Gil.
Well, there's a lot of New Yorkers that live in Florida, right? So,
and you know, this is something that I found very disturbing. All of Long Island went red. And, you know, we're starting to turn into the Florida of the North and, you know, or Staten Island or something like that. No offense, Staten Island listeners, but my God, what's happening to us? Go ahead, Gila.
No, I think this also kind of ties in with what we were talking about a couple of months ago when we were talking about the Ring camera show on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I said that, you know, the fact that there are now all these streaming services, all these platforms, everybody's reaching for eyeballs and they want, first of all, they have to figure out enough content to fill 24 hours a day, and then they have to keep people tuning in 24 hours a day. So the fact that everybody's got their own outrage cycle and they have to keep people focused on whatever it is, and it is now is your shampoo trying to kill you 24 hours a day on every topic in the whole entire world. And I'm also wondering why it is or how it is that the voices that get this kind of traction tend to be voices moving more toward the right wing. Like, you remember Air America? What happened there, man? Mm-hmm. I miss Air America. And how that, there's no answer, I think, is another part of the problem. And yes.
Well, I think the answer is that left-wing people, with the exception of Pacifica and BAI, I mean it, can't really run a radio network. I think, you know, right-wing people, for some reason, they're, you know, the way they operate things, which is basically I'm right, you're wrong, and not open to nuance or, you know, alternative ideas or things that might be a challenge for your point of view. That, you don't see that as much. So it's a lot simpler to just run a business that way. I don't know. That's my theory. But Air America was a good idea. It just wasn't run very well. But there should be more variety on the radio. And let me just for a second step on the soapbox and say that that's why a station like WBAI is so hugely important, because look around. You don't hear voices like this anywhere. You basically, certainly on the AM dial, nothing but right wing. You know, it's because of what Gila brought up, that places like Air America disappear. Fortunately, places like WBAI have not disappeared. The reason for that is you, listeners. So please go to the website, give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org, or call 212-209-2950. And please be generous. Please be generous. It keeps us on the air, keeps us talking about these issues and talking about all kinds of other issues that are going to be happening between now and 2024. We need as many voices as possible that are questioning the system and questioning the way things happen. So it's never been more important. We've also been off the air for a number of days because of all the transmitter maintenance going on in Midtown. Oh, what a nightmare. But you can help fix that just by giving a generous donation, 212-209-2950, or give to WBAI.org. Okay, I'm getting off the soapbox now. Alex, go ahead.
Just for the record, Air America was also a cargo airline that the CIA covertly owned, I think between 1950 and probably the end of the Vietnam War, and it was used actually to supply covert operations in Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War. So just, you know, want to clarify that. But speaking of clandestine things and whatnot, you know, leading up to the election, I want to offer an observation, because I spent a lot of time in Pennsylvania. As you know, I usually do the show from Pennsylvania, and we're out in the Poconos quite a bit. And I have a son that watches an inordinate and probably unhealthy amount of YouTube videos about video games and all kinds of things that, you know, kids his age do. And one thing that was extremely concerning to me is that he came to me asking me about, you know, who this Fetterman guy was, and is he really too radical for Pennsylvania? I said, what the hell are you talking about?
How old is your kid?
Nine.
And he asked you if John Fetterman was too radical for Pennsylvania. That's almost an exact quote from a commercial.
Well, that's where do you think he got it? It was from these YouTube ads that they're playing, that they bombarded everybody with in Pennsylvania. It was absolutely extraordinary. You couldn't go on any kind of social media. You know, if you had an IP address that traced back to Pennsylvania, you were going to be bombarded with this load of crap. You know, and he knew about Dr. Oz. You know, is he really an extremist? Is Fetterman too radical? What's going to – and this was concerning to him because he's 9 years old. He's being bombarded by these ads thinking that there's going to be some radical in charge of the state in which he's living at the moment. And he doesn't know what's going to happen. I mean, so it was really crazy. But on the other hand, it really makes you wonder about the ethics of bombarding anybody with an IP address in Pennsylvania with these types of ads, especially when you know that the videos with which the ads are associated relate to children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's the play there? I mean, they're obviously going for people that are a lower voting age, but, you know, maybe in this, you know, crazy, scheme to make a profit here, they just kept playing the ads over and over and over and over again because they knew the budget from the Democrats and Republicans was so through the roof.
Well, Alex, let's just say that you weren't an informed parent and that your child came to you and asked you that simple question in a very innocent tone. And it got you thinking, is John Fetterman too radical for the state of Pennsylvania? And you heard it from your own child. You see how they manipulate things.
Yeah. Well, you know, trust me, when your 9-year-old asks you whether a political candidate for the Senate is too radical for the state that he spends some time during the weekend, it does get you thinking whether or not that candidate is too radical for Pennsylvania. I'm thinking, where the hell did he get this? And then you realize, oh, my God, he's just getting inundated with these ads. So but it's a weird thing. And I will say this, too. I mean, I feel like I bring this up every election cycle, but I think there is some serious problem on both sides of the aisle here when it comes to sharing data about voters and information, in particular, contact details of voters. Because I signed up, I would say years ago, maybe 6 years ago, I think it was, I signed up for be on the email list or something for a friend of mine who's in Congress now. And he won again last night, Andy Kim. He's a friend of mine from Oxford. He was at Magdalen. I was at New College right across the street. And I think it was 6 years ago he ran for Congress and won. And I signed up for his campaign. But I think that the DCCC or something takes all that data and sends it around because I'm getting inundated with text messages from Chuck Schumer. And anytime they send me these messages, even though I am a Democrat and I vote mostly for Democrats, I just find it offensive that somebody posing as Chuck Schumer is texting me in the middle of my workday, reminding me to go out and vote. So I always ask the question, I always respond to the text message, where did you get this number? You know, from where did you get this number? And the response is always the same. And that's why I want to bring this up to you, Emmanuel, because they always say, we got this, we got all the information from the voter rolls.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I don't think that there's I don't think my cell phone number.
Well, hold on a second. Are you getting this in New York or are you getting this in Pennsylvania?
New York.
New York. In New York, phone numbers are not part of what is kept on the voter registration. Right. But some states, though, do have phone numbers. Some states have email addresses. But right. As far as I know, New York is not one of those. Now, I had a similar thing happen where I got a text message from one candidate. And then within the next day, I got a text message from their opponent. So somehow my number is being shared. I think there might be some other list going around where more information is shared based on initial contact information.
They're called calling lists, and mm-hmm. there are companies that sell them to campaigns. And it's probably that what they really mean is that the voter rolls themselves are compared with other commercially available resources that might have your correct phone number. And that compilation is sold in sets based on districts to campaigns who want to make calls and solicit.
Yeah, it might not even be related to, Alex, to your previous relationship politically. It might be from somewhere else entirely. Just I mean, you know, people get all kinds of I get Donald Trump messages sometimes. They're really funny, and I save them all. But, you know, they make it seem like all sorts of different people are personally texting you or emailing you. And it's, you know, I don't know how many people fall for that, but it's very common. And it's also an increasing problem because, you know, you can opt out of commercial spam. You can't opt out of political spam. Someone correct me if I'm wrong on that, but that's what I heard. You can't put political calls on do not call list. They can call you with impunity.
Yeah, or to be more accurate, political organizations don't have to abide by the do not call list. They can call whoever they like.
All the more reason to associate yourself with affiliation. You'll get half as much because the other side won't even try you. If you're undecided or independent, they're all going to bombard you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're firmly in one camp, I mean, you'll basically get stuff that you don't need to hear anyway.
Go ahead, Gayla.
Something that I find interesting is that all of the in our home, one of us is associated with, and one of us is registered with a political party, and one of us is not. And all the mailers that came out before the primary were obviously mailed to the person with a party affiliation. And since then, they've all come to the person without one, but for the party that the one of us who is affiliated with, which I found fascinating. I know that my phone has been just completely blown up the last couple of days. Today was nice. How was your phone the last couple of days?
Yeah, about the same.
I don't know where they got my number, but I just wish they would save the money on the mailers. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it's traditional, and it seems to work. It's a lot of people talking and going back and forth, and it's a hard thing to put an end to. Yeah, Alex, go ahead.
I want to read you the repartee I had with Chuck Schumer.
Oh, boy.
So I get a message a couple of days ago. Hi, it's Chuck Schumer. Delivery workers stepped up during the pandemic, but they were denied the most basic benefits. I've proudly worked with them to make things right, and we won big. See what we accomplished, blah, 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 link. And I write back, where did you get this number? And he writes, in quotation.
Yeah, it's probably an it. It's probably just a machine.
He writes back, the next day at, so probably about, I don't know, almost 24 hours later, I get this response. We got your number from the list of registered voters in New York. We want to make sure that all our folks are voting. Do you want to receive your local polling station in time so you can vote? And then my response is, you got my phone number from a voter registration list? I don't think that's accurate. I'm a registered Democrat, but the voter rolls do not contain my telephone number. Please tell me specifically how you obtained this telephone number. And do you know what they said in response?
Nothing.
TD.
Nothing.
Exactly. No, that's what I would expect.
Nothing.
So I think, you know, what Kyle said is accurate, that basically there is a voter registration list. But then to counter what I said before, because you did get involved with someone politically, your name was matched with your phone number. And now they have both. And they cross-referenced and they shared. So that's good luck getting that to stop.
Yeah.
I remember seeing those lists on that green and white paper with the dot matrix.
Dot matrix. Yeah,
and that was like a call list, and you would go through it, and you'd rip half of, you know, a stack to volunteers.
I don't think they still use that.
In my head, they do,
or punch cards or anything like that. But the thought is the same.
Yeah, you rip off the ends.
What I'd like to do in the time remaining, and we have so much more to talk about. We'll be on overtime at 8 o'clock on YouTube. But does anybody have any stories from voting, from going to the polls? For me, going yesterday in a place where there's almost never a line. It's basically you go in, you vote, and you leave. Maybe one person ahead of you. I had to wait a half hour. I had to wait a half hour, and there were a lot of people. Many of them seemed to be younger people, and of course, in the end, it turned out that Long Island voted pretty red, pretty much across the board. But technically, things seemed to work pretty well. you know, filling out those pieces of paper, sliding it into the fax machine or whatever that thing is, and having it cast successfully. I didn't notice any problems out on Long Island, but maybe you guys saw something, Alex?
Well, yeah, I want to bring it back to my nearly radicalized 9-year-old again here, because I brought my son with me to vote for the first time yesterday at our local polling station in the West Village. And it was a really great experience, I think, for him, because this was his way of seeing democracy in action. And he asked me, you know, is it going to be exciting when we go over there? Is this going to be fun? And I said, well, you know, if you think, you know, reading about propositions and things on the back of a ballot is fun, then, you know, absolutely. I said, but, you know, this is what government, you know, for the people and by the people and of the people looks like. This is what people have fought for, bled for, and died for since the 18th century in this country. And it may seem boring, but it's really
kind of scary the way you say it, fought for and died for. You said that to your 9-year-old? Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's a big history buff, too. So I think he really enjoyed the experience of going in there. They look through the rolls. We get the ballot. I showed him how everything works. And we chose, you know, the candidates for whom we wanted to vote. And then we got down to the areas in the ballots where we were voting for justices of the Supreme Court and justices of the civil court. And there was only one candidate. Let's say where there were three candidates and you had to choose three.
Yeah.
Where there was one candidate for the civil court and you have to choose one. And it's just this exercise in stupidity. And I hate the idea of only having one candidate.
I agree. I skipped all of those.
Well, what I do for them is I write in candidates to oppose them. And they're mostly my dogs. Dogs that are both living and dead. And so I said to my son, all right, let's do, you know, Winston, Julia, you know, all of our dogs' names that we wrote in for all of these. And then he looked at me and said, Daddy, are you sure that this is legal?
I was about to ask you the same question. Okay, I'm glad I think like a 9-year-old. But basically, yeah, you know, you're writing in fake names pretty much. I don't know. This sounds like it's kind of a...
For whomever you want to vote.
I guess you can. But you bring up a very good point, though. Those judges, not only is there only one choice, but they represent Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, and working families. They're all four. What is the point of even running? I don't get that. So there's no reason in the world for me to select any of them. I don't write in names because I just have this suspicion if I write in a name, it's going to somehow get flagged and put aside and counted later. And I don't really have any names to give anyway.
Well, I feel like I may have given you some ideas for the next election cycle, Emmanuel. Uh-huh. But the other thing that was interesting to my son was that when we finished filling out the ballot and we went over to put it into the ballot scanner, I had told him, I said, look, you know, this is a voter verified paper record that we have in our hand right here. We're going to put it into the system. It's going to scan it, and all those choices that we made, all those bubbles that we filled in, those are going to be turned into some kind of electronic tabulation. But let's say there's some tampering with the machine, or we don't know what happened, or there's a memory problem, the hard drive fails, whatever. At least we still have this paper ballot. That's why it's called a voter verified paper ballot, because if something happens to the election, we can always go back to the paper trail. And that's different from these direct recording electronic systems that other states have.
And by this time, a small crowd had gathered around Alex as he continued his lecture.
Well, one of the electoral workers, was listening to me, you know, lecture my son on the merits and demerits of various voting systems. And at the end of this lecture, where we're talking about the direct recording electronic system that doesn't have some kind of voter verified record, so if there's tampering, how do you audit that system? You know, and Sasha said, well, that seems really unsafe. And I said, well, you're absolutely right. And you know, people have actually filed lawsuits claiming that this is an equal protection issue under the 14th Amendment. But this voter, this ballot poll worker person came over and said, that was absolutely amazing. He said, you know, can we just adopt you for the rest of the night? You could lecture. I said, no, I have to go. I've got things to do. But it was fun. I really enjoyed it. It was a great experience for my son. And where we vote in the West Village, it's extraordinarily diverse. It's in one of the LGBT centers, and everybody I felt like was happy and you know, great to be out and voting.
And no oath keepers watching what you did.
Not that I was aware of.
That's tremendous. Rob, go ahead.
Well, we went to vote in Queens, and it was, I think, really well populated considering it was a midterm election. So, you know, lots of people, but the staff, the poll workers were on point, getting everyone through very quickly. The interesting thing from a tech perspective is we all got our I voted pens. And because
pens, I don't even get stickers. Yep. I asked
pens and stickers.
No, they never. My voting place never has stickers. They even said that to me yesterday. Let alone pens. I didn't even know there were pens.
But what's interesting about these is that historically, since I've begun voting, you would sign your name in ink in a book that they have with everyone's names and addresses in the area. But that is no longer. You no longer sign a physical book. You're signing an iPad now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so these pens have a touchscreen nipple on the end, so you can use them on the touchscreen to sign your name, and that's new.
So you use the stylus part to sign the iPad, and then you use the pen part to vote, and it's very exciting. And there's enough that everybody can have their own because, you know, pandemic. The interesting thing, we vote at a school in the cafeteria. In the basement. So we got a, yeah. So flashbacks just everywhere. And we got up to our precinct table. And interestingly enough, there was a line at the next precinct table over. 10 people were waiting at the precinct table next to ours, but we got right up there. And she said, "I'm so sorry. The signal down here is really bad. So it's just going to take a second for the whole thing to reset." She showed me the moving. I said, "We're in the basement. It's fine. We're totally fine." But yeah, we have pens, we got stickers. I was voter 364 at my particular scanner.
Wow, I was voter 599. But I was in a gym in an elementary school, and I said to Kyle, who I brought with me, not to watch over what I was voting for, but just so he could you know, be a part of the New York process. But basically, it's the most time I spent in a gym in years because I was there for a half hour just waiting in line. I noticed that there are so many baskets for basketball in a typical gym. There were 8 of them. And I just wonder, why do you need so many baskets? You know, it's like this one sport. They really invest in that sport in gymnasiums. It's interesting. So that's what I noticed. Did anyone else have any interesting experiences they wanted to share? Kyle, I know you vote by mail in Washington State. And Washington has this great system where they will mail you anywhere.